Hello and welcome to Radio Prague. I'm Dieter Siedu and we start the program with a brief news bulletin. Prime Minister and acting chairman of the Social Democrats, Stanislav Gross, will most likely be elected party leader at the next Congress in March. The Social Democrats, the main ruling coalition party, held conferences in the country's 13 districts this weekend to discuss their party's future and assess who will most likely be in their leadership. Mr. Gross won the support of his colleagues in 10 districts, while his competitor, Transport Minister Zdeněk Škromach, only won the support of the Social Democrats in the Moravian town of Zlín. On Saturday, Mr. Gross warned the Social Democrats had adopted an image of a divided and extinct party that has nothing to offer its supporters. He called on to his colleagues to put aside their differences and unite to prove the party is active, has goals, and strives to achieve them. A Czech man who escaped from a Liberian prison on Friday has been found. In the Czech Republic, in April 2004, 42-year-old Dalibor Kop was found guilty of the illegal trade in arms. He fled the country and was found in Liberia, where he was detained in a Moravian prison before he was to be extradited back to the Czech Republic. On Friday, Mr. Kop was on the run after he apparently managed to bribe his way out of jail. Mr. Kop could face up to 10 years in prison. A concert in Poland on Monday will honor 4 Czech musicians who suffered at the Auschwitz death camp and died at the hands of the Nazis in the 1940s. 3 days before the 60th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, the Judaica Center hosts the concert featuring works by Pavel Haas, Gideon Klein, Viktor Ullmann, and Hans Grasa. The latter, known for his children's opera Brunibar, about a brother and sister who raise money to obtain milk for their sick mother, only to have it stolen by the evil organ grinder Brunibar. The opera was first performed by the children of the Terezin concentration camp as they were being prepared for transportation to Auschwitz, Belsen and Treblinka. Of all EU member states, Britain and Ireland have been most attractive to Czech employment seekers since they joined the European Union in May. The EURES website, designed to support free movement of labour across the Union, also shows that Germany and Austria are also popular destinations. Since the Czech Republic's accession to the EU, some 139,000 Czech pages on the website have been consulted concerning work and life abroad. Some 29,000 pages have also been viewed by people looking at the possibilities of finding a job in the Czech Republic. And a quick look at the weather. Meteorologists say the snow in most parts of the country will soon turn to sleet and rain. Daytime temperatures over the next few days will gradually drop below freezing point. I'm Dieter Asiru and that's the end of the news.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Kate Barrett. Coming up, a diplomatic row erupts between the Czech Republic and Belarus. In today's talking point, the life of a young boy who perished at Auschwitz, whose recently found diary is just being published in the Czech Republic. And haggis in Prague? Robbie Burns' birthday is celebrated on the banks of the Vltava. That and the latest in Czech sport coming up, so please stay tuned. A diplomatic row has broken out between the Czech Republic and Belarus. On Wednesday, the Belarusian authorities expelled a Czech diplomat after arresting and detaining him despite his diplomatic immunity. In return, a Belarusian diplomat was expelled from Prague on Friday in an incident reminiscent of the Cold War. Pavla Horakova has the details.
The Czech diplomat Pavel Křivohlavý was given a 24-hour deadline to leave Belarus last Wednesday after he was arrested at a Minsk cafe while reportedly drinking alcohol with a 16-year-old boy. The Prague-based Belarusian independent journalist Natalia Sudlyanko says the incident was a setup by the authorities, prepared well in advance.
I think that this was being prepared for at least half a year, because on Friday, the Belarusian TV has shown the film about the whole accident. They have shown the video materials with Pavel Křivohlavý, where they told that this was Pavel Křivohlavý, where he was kissing young guys. And then they showed the materials of interrogation of these teenagers. And in these materials, the teenagers were telling about their homosexual contacts, which were held with at Pavel Krivoklav's flat. But the faces of these guys were not seen, and their voices were changed. So it means that nobody can say exactly whether these were just those guys. And I'm sure that no independent interrogator will see those materials.
The Czech Foreign Ministry sees the manner in which Mr. Krivohlavy was expelled as non-standard and says his expulsion was politically motivated. Jan Petránek is a Czech journalist following events in Belarus.
Samozřejmě, že tohleto musí být policejně prošetřeno.
Of course, the issue must be investigated properly. But there are fears that the criminal charges were brought because you can't incriminate a diplomat politically. If he was meeting young people, it would be hard to accuse him of espionage, so he was charged with corrupting morals. What really happened is hard to tell now, but it looks like a ploy to get rid of an unwanted Czech diplomat.
Jako záminka k tomu, aby nepříjemný český diplomat musel zmizet z Běloruska.
The Belarusian journalist Natalia Sulianko agrees and adds the affair has to do with President Alexander Lukashenko's campaign for a third presidential term.
I think that the real reason why he was expelled, and besides why he was expelled in such a manner, is that Alexander Lukashenko has the policy of demonizing, I'd say, Western countries and Western diplomats, and he insisted that the Belarusian KGB, I mean their special services, should show the Belarusian people that Western diplomats are making prostitutes from Belarusian girls, that they bring only homosexuality and so on and so forth.
Czech human rights organizations, along with former Czech anti-communist dissidents, have been very active in supporting the political opposition in Belarus. But, as Jan Petránek says, there is more that Mr. Lukashenko holds against the Czech Republic.
Celkově ovšem ten běloruský režim
The Belarusian regime is most angry with the Czech Republic because Mr. Lukashenko was not granted an entry visa to the Czech Republic in 2002 for the NATO summit and the conference that was to bring the West and the East to one table. The relations between the Czech Republic and Belarus are quite nervous. They're not at crisis point, but I'd say they're quite rancorous. They reflect the abyss between a developing and quite stable democracy in the Czech Republic and Lukashenko's regime, which is considered internationally to be one of the 6 or 7 worst regimes on earth.
That was Czech journalist Jan Petránek. You're listening to Radio Prague, where we now turn to birthday celebrations of a very old Scot. The Scottish poet Robbie Burns borrowed his first book from the local baker, and from there the only way was up. His poems, which were originally published to raise money so that he could emigrate, ironically turned Burns into a Scottish icon. The man behind Auld Lang Syne and the title of J.D. Salinger's Catcher in the Rye turns 246 this Tuesday. His birthday is being marked both at home and abroad. In-house Scot Rosie Johnston reports.
Tvá oblá tvář je čarovná, je tváří vůdce. Chuti tvé se maso, trůbky nerovná, a co jich jest?
Addressing the haggis in Czech at the annual Burns Supper of the Friends of Scotland Society. Here it is in its original Scots. Fair fa' your honest sonsy face, great chieftain o' the pudding race. Abune them a' you tak your place, paint triper therm. Weel are you worthy o' grace, as lang as my own. Such is the centrepiece of every Burns supper the world over, although not normally in a Czech rendition. Nearly 250 years after his birth, the bard's birthday is still celebrated from Kathmandu to Cairo, Singapore to Skegness. The British ambassador to the Czech Republic, Linda Duffield, explains his appeal.
I think most people are familiar with some of his poems, but the amazing thing, I suppose, is to see how widely known Burns is around the world. It's not easy poetry to read, but it means something to everybody. So that's why I think he's so special.
Prague, of course, did not miss out on the festivities, and on Saturday, a homesick Scot got to compare plaids and dance to the gay Gordons with Czechs and Scots alike. The event, a haggis-based supper in Cayley, was organised by the Czech Friends of Scotland Club. Its director, Václav Raut, describes the connection between Czechs and Scots.
I think the both country has a very similar because we have very similar history. And because we have the big country, big neighbors, like we have Germans, we have English. So our history were very similar, not same, but similar sense of humor, the likes of beer, likes of whiskey. So I think it's not only this, of course we have more, like for example, poems. You have Robbie Burns, we have Karel Hynek Mácha. He's very similar life. Very similar. And
Burns Night is January the 25th and does not take much more than a whiskey or two to celebrate. So, Slanjevar?
Thanks, Rosie. It's now time for the latest news from the Czech sporting world with Ian Willoughby.
Czech skiing has just enjoyed one of its most successful weekends ever, with two wins in World Cup events. The first of those triumphs was for cross-country skier Lukáš Bauer. After 30 grueling kilometres, he somehow managed to find the strength to come from behind in the last few metres and cross the line 0.4 seconds ahead of his nearest rival. Bauer, who had been having a poor season until Saturday's success, had this to say on the line from the Italian resort of Pragelato.
It's the second time I've won a World Cup race, and it was far and away my best result this season. There's a month or perhaps less to go until the World Championships, and I hope my form will continue to improve, so we'll see.
Lukáš Bauer. It was a full 10 years since the Czech Republic last won a World Cup ski jumping event, but that changed on Sunday when Jakub Janda achieved a lifelong dream and took first place in Germany's TTZ Neustadt.
I was 99% sure it would work out. It was great, the most successful weekend of my life, and I really felt euphoric. But that competition is already in the past, and now I have to concentrate on my next event.
And leading women's cross-country skier Katarzyna Neumanova also did well at the weekend, finishing second in the World Cup 15-kilometer skiathlon. Football and former Czech international captain Pavel Nedvěd sustained a serious knee injury in a game for Juventus on Sunday. If the worst fears are confirmed, Nedvěd could miss the rest of the season. There had been speculation he might announce a return to the national team next month. In Czech club football, Sparta Prague have signed Miroslav Matušovic from Baník Ostrava. The fee is believed to be over 20 million crowns. That's around $850,000. Meanwhile, an announcement on whether Sparta will face corruption charges has been put back another week. But corruption isn't the only problem facing Czech football. First division clubs Bilšany and Opava may be barred from the league due to insolvency. The same fate threatens second division sides Hradec Králové and Bohemians. Bohemians are in such dire straits their players are threatening to strike, while Bilšany just managed to find the money to avert a player walkout on Friday. All four clubs have until February 15th to prove they have the finances to see them through the rest of the season. Finally, tennis, and there were no Czech singles players left in the Australian Open as the competition entered its second week. Nicole Vaidišová and Radek Štěpánek went furthest in Melbourne, but both were knocked out in the third round. That's all the sport for today.
Thanks, Ian. You're listening to Radio Prague's English service, and just a reminder that in honor of this Thursday, marking Holocaust Memorial Day, the 60th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, all our features this week will be related to the Holocaust. Our first of the series is today's Talking Point, in which Dida Asiedu looks at the life of a young boy who perished at Auschwitz and whose recently found diary is just being published in Prague.
November 1941, Friday. At school in the morning. The Mautners, who live on our floor, have to go to Terezin with thousands of others. Mr. Mautner went to the Jewish community to ask whether it isn't a mistake. He is already 50 years old and sick. In the late afternoon, we went for a walk in the city across Charles Bridge, Klarov, and Belgrade Street. 29th November 1941, Saturday. With Papa by the slaughterhouse in the morning, at Grandmother's in the afternoon. Mr. Mautner has been to the community. Apparently it was no mistake, so he has to go as soon as Monday, December the 1st. In a month, the entire Mautner family will have to follow him.
The story of Peter Ginz, an excerpt of whose diary you just heard, is a tragic one. Peter Ginz was born to a Jewish father and non-Jewish mother in Prague in 1928. He had one sister, Eva, who was 2 years younger. At the age of 14, he was torn out of his family and sent to the Jewish ghetto in Terezin. 2 years later, to Auschwitz, where he perished in the gas chamber at the age of only 16.
Peter Ginz was one of about 135,000 Jews who were gradually sent to annihilation camps in the East. And since he was so multi-talented and very active, he was leading person of youth in Terezin. He organized many activities, including publishing underground magazine. He started to write some novels, romans. So everybody knew that he was an exceptional boy, with exceptional talent. And actually, his drawings and diaries, which are preserved, testify to the fact how exceptional he was.
Leo Pavlat, the director of the Jewish Museum in Prague, introducing us to Peter Ginz. All of Peter Ginz's relatives from his Jewish father's side of the family were sent to concentration camps. Only three survived: his father, sister, and one cousin. After the war, his sister Eva moved to Israel, where she still lives. Not one day goes by without her remembering the short but very special life of her older brother.
My brother, who was 2 years older than me, was for me always an example for an imitation. He was an example mostly in the spiritual field. I think that the most characteristic trait of his personality was his big curiosity about almost everything. He was interested in nature sciences, in geography, in languages, ancient languages, and modern habits of people from far countries, Africa and India. And also I remember very well that when we were walking, his eyes were often focused on the ground, and he was observing insects and plants.
The memory of Peter Ginz has been kept alive by Jewish centers and museums, which have preserved some of his numerous writings and drawings. But Peter's name became known to much of the world after the space shuttle Columbia exploded on February 1st, 2003, the exact day that Peter would have turned 75. None of the crew survived, including Israeli astronaut Ilan Ramon, who chose to take a copy of Peter's drawing, Moon Landscape, on his journey into space to remind him of the Jewish people's fate. In Prague, media reports on the tragic Columbia explosion and Peter Ginz's drawing came to the attention of a man who had just bought a house that had similar drawings stashed away in the attic. He emailed scanned samples to the Yad Vashem Museum in Israel, which in turn showed them to Peter's sister, Eva.
I was very excited, first of all, very, very excited. It was a joy for me to see it because I never, ever knew about it. And I immediately recognized his handwriting and I remembered some of the events he was writing about. So the diaries, which are written day by day, almost for 2 years before he was taken to Theresienstadt, is a true testimony of how life of a child continues even under very hard conditions. Because he writes there about everything, what he did every day, and not only about the terrible things which happened. Also about quite trivial things and some jokes with his friends and so on. And I was never ill before, but afterwards I fell ill. I got high blood pressure, which I never had.
23rd December 1941, Tuesday. We have just received a notice from the Jewish community to bring in, by December the 31st, all harmonicas and other musical instruments that are easy to carry, as well as thermometers, cameras and things like that. Besides that, we have to register all larger, non-portable musical instruments. At grandmother's in the afternoon. 24th December 1941, Wednesday. My father, Uncle Milos and Slava received a notice to be ready when it snows to clear it away. At grandmother's in the morning, took a walk with Papa and Eva in the afternoon. 25th December 1941, Thursday. At grandmother's in the morning, in Manini with the entire family in the afternoon. It is very windy, so we had to turn back. In the evening, Lianka from the Koners came to invite us to dinner. They are lighting the Christmas tree. They have become totally Aryan. Mr. Hula was there, the Koners, the Fischkusses, newlyweds, and Mila Weisbach. It is snowing, and we all fear that it will stay on the ground and Father will have to clear it. Once, last year, he also had to do such work, but this time at Kobeli Airport. He was made to work in water that was several feet deep. And Father, he was there about 5 times, caught a cold. The Jews will most likely have to give away their sweaters again.
The diaries were written between 1941 and 1942, before Peter Ginz was sent to Terezin, as he was living in Prague with his parents and younger sister, attending a Jewish school. Zuzana Zaldrobielkova from the publishing house Trigon put the contents of the diary into electronic form.
When he wrote the diaries, he was 13 or 14 years old, and he just write down the text without judging, without evaluating of situations. He just wrote that they threw him out from a tram because he was a Jew, because he had a star, but it was without emotions written. And what was most important for me was that he known that after he will be 14 years old, he have to go to a concentration camp, and he just waited. You could notice it from his handwriting, because when this diary starts, it's a very nice handwriting, and when the situation is worse, it starts to be much more nervous, because he knows that this date is coming.
The last entry Peter Ginz made into his diary was 1 month before the anticipated date. It read,
August the 9th, 1942, Sunday. Stayed home in the morning.
There was a German law from Nuremberg that these children from these mixed marriages, they were obliged to all the restrictions like all the Jews, only with one exception. And the exception was that they were taken to concentration camps when they were 14 years old. So when Peter was 14 years old, and it was in the year 1942, parents were obliged to to give him to let him go to give him to the Germans. So I remember very well the time when he left. It was very, very sad for all of us. They took a child and took it out from the family. And my parents waited then 2 years in fear and hoped that the war will end finally. But it didn't end, and in the year 44, they were obliged to send me to the concentration camp alone. And when I saw him in Terezin, I was very, very surprised how tall he is in these 2 years, but also how very thin and very pale.
Eva and Peter hardly saw each other, as there were separated living quarters for girls and boys. Eva fell ill and spent 6 weeks in hospital with scarlet fever and diphtheria. She was released from hospital in the summer, the last summer she spent close to her brother. On September 28, 1944, Peter was taken to Auschwitz, never to be seen by his family again.
This week's Talking Point by Dida Asiedu. And just for your information, The Diary of My Brother will be available in Czech bookstores in February, although only in Czech for now. There should be English and Hebrew versions coming out soon. That brings us to the end of the program now. If you'd like to send us any comments or questions, please write to us at english@radio.cz. For now, from me, Kate Barrett, and the rest of the team here in Prague, it's goodbye and thanks for listening.